Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I am your host, Dr. Gina Dorfman. I'm going to change things up a bit today with our guest, Ian Young. Ian is the marketing strategist here at Yappy, but most importantly, he's a patient. Sometimes seeing things from a slightly different perspective is helpful and can give us a lot of insight on how we can improve our communication with patients. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. Ian, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great, Gina. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I'm glad you agreed to do this. I know this is going to be fun. Before we get started, can you give me a little bit of sort of your background? You know, you work at Yappy, and you are also my patient.
I am.
So you kind of have you know, a little bit of a experience with dentistry, both on a professional level and as a patient. So I think this is going to be a great episode because you can contribute in both ways. But I know you shared some of your previous.
No, absolutely. Where do I start? I guess when I was very young, I had an experience with the dentist that was not very great. My very first experience I can remember was roughly when I was in the first or second grade. Way back in the late 90s. And we had a dentist who was visiting the school that day. And then after school, they had a program where parents could have their kids stay for cleanings. And my mom opted in for that. We didn't have dental insurance at the time. And all I remember was just getting really like an excruciating pain from being chairside. And I don't know if it was just that there wasn't enough numbing agent or if I was just not used to the feel of the drill, but I just remember being very young and it being very traumatic. I had a few cavities that had to get filled, and I just remember sitting in the chair for what felt like hours. I mean, I was very young, and sometimes, like, I know we can kind of exaggerate things in our mind as we get older, but I just remember it not being a very optimal experience for me. And then growing up, too, like, my family never had insurance, and so I wanted to travel at one point in my life when I was 18, and I wanted to go abroad for a year. And one of the requirements with the program that I was traveling with was to have your wisdom teeth removed if they hadn't been, or to have at least an evaluation. And mine definitely were impacted, and I needed to have those removed. And those had to come out of my pocket. My parents didn't want to pay for it. So my hard-earned money from waiting tables in high school went to the dentist and a few more fillings. So I didn't have the greatest experience when I was younger or in high school. But then I started working, and I had kind of a different mindset. Really wanted to take care of my dental health, make that a priority. And I started seeing a dentist, a family dentist in the San Ynez Valley area. That's where I'm from. Very small practice. And it was just very warm and inviting and welcoming. And I had a really great time there. I really appreciated just how honest and upfront they were with a lot of things, but they weren't very pushy. And then I had the exact opposite kind of an experience when I moved to Los Angeles for the first time. I started working for you, but unfortunately I didn't start going to you for dentistry. I should have done that from the first point. But I went to a cosmetic dentist, and I didn't go with the mindset of having cosmetic treatment done. It was just that he was very close to where I was living at the time. And I went with the expectation that I was going to get a cleaning. And the first day I went, I ended up getting a set of x-rays and then a $3,500 treatment plan handed to me for gum grafting. And I was told that if I didn't make this a priority, that my teeth were going to fall out. I was like very confused, very upset about this. I was worried that like, oh my gosh, am I not taking good care of my teeth? And so it was just not an optimal experience whatsoever, and kind of really shaded my mindset. And it was also rough because I was working at Yappy at the time and really kind of gaining insight and knowledge into the dental industry. And I was like, well, this isn't really like a good experience that I'm having as a patient, and I'm a little frustrated here. But luckily, I went to your practice for a second opinion, and I had Dr. Jeff, who was amazing and really took great care of me and told me that the recession was very minimal and that I didn't need to have a gum graft, and then in fact I probably won't have to have one in my lifetime if I keep up good oral health habits. So yeah, I guess that's kind of the long spiel of things right there.
You know, I don't know if you could tell, I'm laughing, but I do remember you coming in and you're like, you know, I don't know, I think my teeth are going to fall out, at least that's what. So, and you know, it's disheartening to listen as a dentist because, you know, I completely trust Dr. Jeff. I think he's amazing. But I did take a look at your you know, x-rays and your record that we took in the office, just out of curiosity, hearing your story. And I have to tell you that, you know, Dr. Jeff and I are both very like-minded in our approach to treatment. And so when I looked at it, I kind of, you know, I thought that everything that Dr. Jeff told you was correct. You know, I didn't really feel like we were even being minimal in the treatment plan that we recommended to you. So, you know, and I think the problem is, I think that a lot of patients have that kind of experience where, and you know, what's strange is that sometimes we hear it and we question, is the patient maybe not hearing this, or is the dentist really being that aggressive? Is the dentist really not communicating, you know, that whatever they're offering is elective? It's very difficult to say, but I think as a dentist, this is a very good feedback, because sometimes whether we intended or not, our patients leave not fully understanding our intentions or our recommendations, and sometimes they feel pressured into treatment, whether we intended to pressure them or not. So I don't know what your perception is about this.
I totally agree. I think sometimes too, as patients, we come in with a bucket list of expectations. Like that doctor visit prior to going to you, I had the expectation that I was going to have a cleaning that day, and I was so thrown off guard that I wasn't. And that just happened to be what they do at their practice. You come in for an x-ray, you kind of have a little bit of a consultation, and then you come back for the cleaning. But I definitely didn't know that going in, and it threw me off. And I can tell you that I know that other patients have had kind of similar experiences to that. Not that I'm saying that I don't endorse practices that, you know, don't do a cleaning from the get-go. But I think that sometimes it's good to be mindful that patients do have a lot of preconceived ideas in the back of their mind when they come to the dentist.
You know, I was just visiting New York, and I was there for the Greater New York Dental Meeting, and I just happened to attend a lecture by someone we actually met at the Voices of Dentistry last week, I want to say, Dr. Joshua Austin. He was talking about patient reviews, and one of the things that he said that really struck me, he was going over different, you know, he was reading reviews from different practices, and he was very funny. He was doing it in different voices, and one point that he's made is that as a dentist, it's very easy for us to get good reviews, because a lot of times patients go into the office having had the type of experience that you had, where, you know, maybe you were fearful, or maybe you didn't quite understand what they were doing. Maybe you made a great point, and maybe if time allows, I'd like to maybe come back to it, as a child, sometimes when we remember things, we don't really remember them as facts. We sort of remember them as a story that we tell ourselves. You know, there's not facts, there are feelings. And we fill them in with more feelings. And so, you know, maybe that's not exactly what happened. Because I remember that school visit, and I remember my own school visit, and I didn't have any cavities, but I do remember kids going in and getting a lot of fillings done. And I do remember, I remember some, you know, it sounded like they weren't fully numb. Like, it was scary just to be outside and, and hearing what was happening. And that, you know, and that was, of course, in Russia. It was a long time ago. So, you know, hopefully things have changed. But I can completely relate. And whether those fears are real or they're remembered incorrectly, we don't know, but they're actual feelings that patients go in with. And so when patients go in, they have a certain expectation. They don't want to be there. And if we're just, what did you tell me about that first dentist? Or the second dentist, that the small town dentist. Can you repeat that? Because there was so much there. Why was that a good experience?
It was right when I had my first job out of college. I had good dental insurance, and I was like, this is the time to take advantage of that. And I really liked this dentist because she was just very, she wasn't passive, but she wasn't overly, hey, we need to do this, we need to do that. They were like, for the first time in the chair, I've always been self-conscious of my teeth. The hygienist said to me, oh my gosh, you have such beautiful teeth. And I was like, what? And I knew that they weren't buttering me up, but I just really appreciated just how genuinely kind they were. I brought up a few issues to her about my teeth. I was like, hey, listen, I feel that, like, my front teeth are a little crooked. I'd really be interested in Invisalign. She's like, oh, well, if it's just the front teeth, we could actually do like an aligner for that. And if, you know, insurance probably isn't going to cover that, but I can have my gals reach out to you. And they like reached out to me a day later. So they were just like very upfront, honest, to the point. You know, I'll be honest, I was a little lazy at the time. I didn't want to do the research with my insurance, and they kind of did that for me. I know that's not an expectation, but it was very appreciated when, like, the front office gal called me the next day and followed up with me. I just really appreciated all of those little touches that they made.
Okay, so...
And I was just going to say, too, even though they were a small office, I had a text confirmation for my appointment. I immediately was like, oh, wow, this is, like, really convenient. I had a same-day reminder. I don't believe they were using Yappy. I really don't know what they were even using at all, but I just appreciated that that little bit of technology there as well. I felt like they were really catering to my needs.
A very important point that you're making is that as a healthcare professional, it's very important for us to, first of all, find out what it is that the patient wants and either figure out a way to give it to them, or at least communicate clearly enough as to why we can't do it today, what's going to happen. And then maybe the other thing that I heard is, this is one of the things that I talk about in my presentations, is that sometimes we tend to offer solutions to our patients a little too quickly, right? Like, you know, I mean, there's no question that we can, you know, if there is recession, there are things that we can do about it. But sometimes when you said something there about what did you say about the treatment plan that you received at the cosmetic dentist, about the gum grafting? You used a specific word.
When I'm like trying to look back on how I felt about that, it just felt so rushed, because what had happened was I was sitting in the chair. He started looking at my gums, and then he called an assistant or someone else from the practice to come in and look at them. And then she started kind of giving me like almost a scary lecture in a way about gum recession. And I just, you know, this was the first time I was hearing that. At my previous dentist, she had said, you have a little bit of recession in the back of your teeth, but it's nothing major. And this was a year later. I mean, I didn't go in for a 6-month follow-up like I should have. I was switching jobs, moved to LA. But I was sitting in the chair, and then they start kind of just talking to me a little bit about, like, you have recession and this is what we can do for you. And then they, like, pulled me out of the chair and took me to the treatment room, like, shortly thereafter, and handed me the treatment plan, and I just about had a heart attack. And I think I felt very uncomfortable is the main thought that comes to mind.
What I'm curious about, and again, you know, you and I, we discussed what we were going to talk about before we got in. And so there's definitely an agenda going into this. And, you know, we don't want to... you know, we're not criticizing anyone's style, obviously. We hope that this gives our colleagues sort of a glimpse into this is what the patient is seeing. It's almost like you know, as a dentist or as a healthcare or a dental health, dental care professional, was sitting on either side of the chair, we're talking to the patient, we're looking at them through our loops and with the light, and then the patient is laying down and they're looking up at us and their thoughts going through their mind. And we thought, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could just get inside of the patient's head and sort of figure out what it is that they're thinking and feeling. And I happen to know that after you left that office, you never came back. Now, you never wrote a review because, well, you know, you work for Yappy, so you know that you don't write reviews.
I know that reviews are very important to everyone, and I just felt at that time that, yeah, better to just leave than not.
Right, and of course, you know, on one hand, it's a good thing that you didn't write a review, but on the other hand, the dentist never had the benefit of getting that feedback. You know, the one thing that I always say about the reviews is, and as dentists, we get so wound up, you know, we get that bad review and it's like, you know, someone just reached inside of us and ripped our heart out. And then they said something really bad about that, you know, our baby. And I get it. I have the same reaction. But there's something in those reviews. Once in a while, there's a really crazy patient that everything they say is completely, you know, off the charts and none of it is true. And a lot of times they're upset about one thing, but then they come up with this crazy story that has nothing to do with reality.
For me too, like as a patient, like when I'm looking at reviews online, it's pretty easy to determine which ones are genuinely upset and frustrated about a situation and which ones are a rant. Like I remember looking at one dentist one time and in all caps, the review said, overpriced hack, don't go here. And I was like, even as a patient, I'm like, this is just too much. You know, I know that this is someone who had an incredibly was incredibly upset about something. Maybe it was something to do with their insurance and they felt like they had to rant on here and kind of blame the doctor. I don't know. I kind of went in, like, as a patient, I think it's easy to kind of see when the reviews are in one way or another more genuine, and then genuine out of I had a good experience, and then more so like upset as in, you know, I'm really mad, I'm going to rant about this. There's not really always the neutral ones. There are, but they're harder to see sometimes.
These reviews are very important because for the most part, there's some sort of a golden nugget, some sort of a truth that the dentist or his team needs to hear because it's probably something they can fix. And what I've heard somewhere is that for every patient that either complains or writes a review, there are probably 15 other patients who never said anything and they just left, like you.
Well, that's what I'm going to say, too. Even with the dentist that I had prior to that I really had the great experience with, I never, in my subconscious, like, went and left them a review afterward. Now I actually think about that. I feel bad about it now that I have more of the perception of dentistry in mind. I'm like, oh, I should go in and actually, like, leave them a review. They were really awesome. But I had a great experience at that practice, and it never was in the back of my mind after I left that, oh, I'm going to leave this patient a review. I mean, this dentist.
Yeah, you know, that's the reason why it's so hard to get reviews. Isn't it? This is exactly. I hope we have a lot of listeners on this podcast because you're just full of great information. The reason why it's so hard to get reviews is because when our patients have a great experience, they just leave. Maybe they'll come back. Maybe they'll refer others. And if someone asks, like, "Oh, I need a dentist. Can you recommend someone?" You'll say, "Yeah, I have this great dentist and here's his information," but you don't just think about going online and giving them a great review. And so that's why it's so important to ask whether you use automated service like Yappy or you do it in a more, you know, personal way by just asking the patients. I know for a lot of us dentists, it's really hard to just, you know, come out and ask. But that's the reason why it's hard. And then a lot of times the only patients who actually do it on their own are either the ones who are terribly upset and they just want to ruin your business, or they're the ones that, you know, maybe they're elite Yelpers. Like that's what they do.
They're the super fans.
Yeah. The super fans, exactly. But the patients who just had a great experience and would keep going unless they moved and, you know, would refer others. They just don't think about it. They leave and they go on with their life and they never ask for a review. But again, what's interesting is that what I heard, and so we have a couple of things going on here, and I'm so glad we're doing this because there's a lot of great information here. So on one hand, what we're saying is it's very important that we find out why the patient came to us. What are their expectations? And then make sure that we either deliver on those expectations or, in the very least, we are on the same level as to, you know, why we can't do it today, why we're explaining. And then the treatment plan, whether, you know, maybe sometimes I have patients coming in to me and they're saying, you know, I know I have recession and is there anything that you can do about it? And sometimes we do recommend gum grafting. And sometimes yeah. we recommend, you know, maybe we can do bonding for the patient. We have some patients with, you know, coming to us with black triangles and sometimes we use composite to close those black triangles because the gums have receded. And sometimes it's not enough to, you know, you're a millennial, you're a young guy, you have excellent hygiene, you don't have bone loss. And so to me, when I see someone like you and you have, I don't know, now I'm discussing your treatment plan on, I probably have to get your authorization for this, but again, in my mind, I'm thinking, you shouldn't have recession. So there's something going on that needs to be addressed. It's not enough to reposition those gums. It's not enough to put some composite in there because you're going to get more recession. So what's happening that's causing this recession? And you did mention that you were interested in Invisalign. So it seems to me that before someone pulled out that piece of paper with an expensive treatment plan on it, there should have been more discussion as to, are you aware of this problem? Is this a problem?
Yeah, what caused it?
What caused it? Maybe did you have any pictures? Did they take?
They did take pictures.
They didn't take pictures.
No, they didn't actually. I just had X-rays done, and then he did kind of like an exam in my mouth, and then that was when he noticed the receding gum line and had started to mention that.
See, this is interesting because he noticed it looking in your mouth, and I remember you said it was in the back of the mouth, but you know I talk to you every day, and so it's not something that I, you know, obviously visible. So again, you know, picture's worth a thousand words. Maybe just bringing up the subject and kind of, you know, asking, are you aware of this? Is this a problem for you? You know, if you, do you want to talk about the option?
Well, and what I appreciated from my second opinion was we kind of digested like what could have caused the little recession that you do have. And then I think we kind of came to the conclusion that like when I was young and just in general, I kind of overbrush and I aggressively brush my gums. And I don't know if that was like an attributing cause or whatnot, but we kind of had took a few steps backward and were like, okay, what could have possibly caused the issue? Whereas when I was in the other position with the other dentist, it was more so like, this is the problem, this is the treatment.
Right. Yeah. And I think we do that a lot. And you know, I will tell you something, you know, and one of the things that you and I decided we're going to do with this show is we're going to, not with the entire show, but we're going to do like this like mini series or maybe show within the show where we interview patients with different life experiences, different ages, different sort of perspectives on life. And so you're a young millennial male. I'm not a millennial. I'm what's the other generation?
Are you Gen Z?
I'm Gen Y. I'm a female.
Okay,
I'm very appearance conscious. And so for me, if you tell me that I have a health issue, that's going to concern me more than how much is it going to cost and what am I going to do about it. I mean, just the emotion of processing. Am I going to lose my teeth? You know, am I too young to have gum disease? Am I going to have a denture? Like, well, actually, none of my parents have had a denture. I don't know if even if my grandparents ever had a denture. Now that I think about it, I don't remember seeing anyone in my family with a denture. I can understand this feeling of someone who is, you know, whether you're a young male or you are, you know, a female in, you know, I'm in my 40s and I still want to look attractive and I want to be healthy and not losing my teeth would be a huge issue. So going to a dentist and them telling me, you know, you have all these problems before I can rationalize like, okay, you know, can I afford $3,000? You know, am I going to have gum surgery? What's causing this? What are my options? Before I can commit to any of that, how could I have this freak out inside of me? Like, oh my God, I'm losing my teeth, right? And I think you kind of shared with me that you had the same, maybe not to that extent, but you did say, something about like, are my teeth gonna fall out? Are they loose? I remember you talking about this. And now you have to make a decision of committing to that $3,000 treatment plan. And you came for a cleaning.
Yeah, I oftentimes look back at that situation because you know I have the unique perspective of getting to work at Yappy and working, you know, with dental offices closely and helping them also with their marketing. But as I look back on that situation, I think if they had just educated me a little bit more or taken a little bit more time to sit me down and talk to me about the cause of it and like the overall issue and why the treatment was needed, I probably honestly would have within a day or two been like, okay, I can do care credit. Like, you know, I can put a car on hold for a little bit longer and make my gums a priority. But I think it was such a quick diagnosis, and it just felt so fast that was where I had no conscious time in my mind to process it. And then the first thing I did was call my folks, and they were like, oh, you need to get a second opinion, that doesn't sound right. And, you know, a lot of preconceived ideas there. But yeah, maybe had I had been educated a little bit more on the situation instead of just felt rushed, things would have gone a little differently. I don't know.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing your story with us. You know, like I said, for our patients, it's very difficult to come out and say those things to us. What I'm getting out of this is I had an expectation that wasn't met. You know, and then I was recommended something that I wasn't understanding clearly and I wasn't ready to deal with. And I didn't understand, you know, why I had it. I mean, I had an emotional response instead of a rational response. And I just bailed. And I think that a lot of our patients, because we hear those stories all the time. I read those reviews all the time. They're selling me. In fact, I've had some of those reviews coming from my own office. So it's not like, oh, I've mastered this. You know, I know better than anyone else. Sometimes even when you know you need to take the time with a patient, for some one reason or another, you don't. Maybe you don't ask the right questions. You know, sometimes we make assumptions. Why the patient is there, and again, as a dentist, I know how to solve the problem. So I see a problem, I solve a problem. But for a patient, there's a lot more involved, and sometimes, you know, we're just not mindful enough of that. So thank you for sharing that. Now I want to switch gears a little bit because I know that you have also had an experience working in dental marketing prior to coming to Yappy. Tell me a little bit about that, because you know when we were talking, I know there were some interesting things that came out of that conversation as well.
Oh yeah, well I got my degree in marketing, but I had more of a concentration in visual advertising. And shortly after graduation, I started working for a local magazine publication, and they also owned a few local newspapers. I worked as an ad account executive for roughly 6 months, selling print advertising. So I kind of went off of the wheel there in that I graduated college with a whole background in digital marketing, but I ended up doing print marketing starting off. I really, really started at the bottom. But the thing that was really funny to me was they always told me as an ad salesman, like you have to find your niche, like you have to find your business that really pulls you in, and those are the people you want to get the sales from, because it was a publication that didn't it was reliant on ad dollars. Mm-hmm. Like we weren't a a newspaper that was for cost. It was just handed out to the public for free. So we relied on ad dollars, and we had to have a lot of ads in the paper for the paper to really pay for itself. So, you know, there would be salespeople that would reach out to real estate agents, and they would have a lot of, you know, listings and the classified ads and whatnot. But I ended up really getting a really great relationship built with our local dentists. Mm-hmm. And I, this was in the Central Coast, kind of a little bit outside of Santa Barbara. And I really started kind of growing our customer base of dentists, because a lot of dentists, for some reason or another, I don't know why, wanted to advertise in print. And it was always wanting to advertise a new patient special. You know, come in, you'll get $30 off your new patient special, and you'll get 25% off of whitening. But the thing that was really funny was that there started to be just this accumulation of so many dentists wanting to advertise new patient specials that the running joke was that, like, oh, Ian's clients, it's like you're going to open a page and it's like seven dental ads competing for one another. And it literally would be. Sometimes we joke or be like, oh, well, yeah, I can have this white cleaning cleaning and whitening special from Dr. Patel, and I'll save 25%, or I could go over to Dr. Smith, and I'm going to get it for 50% off. So it was almost like this internal competition in a way. And I really struggled, because I was supposed to be giving them advice onto the type of ads that they would want to run. And I always tried to push brand awareness. I tried to push your USPs, like, what are your unique selling points of your practice? I know we don't like the word sales in dentistry, but, like, what do you do that sets you apart from your competition? And a lot of them are like, no. Like, I want to advertise that I do Medicare and implants, and I want to advertise that, like, new patients are going to get a special. So I will be honest with you. I had a lot of frustration with that position and with that job, and I didn't last very long. And it was nice when I was able to turn over to a paperless company, but I just thought it was very interesting that there was just this big assumption that, like, if I advertise a new patient special, that I'm going to get XYZ amount of new patients a month. So
you make an interesting point. Actually, you make two interesting points that I kind of heard. One is it's very, I mean, okay, you know, here in Los Angeles, there's so much competition, right? And so a lot of times we feel like to beat the competition, we have to do everything, right? We have to, we're going to do implants, and we're going to take Medi-Cal, and we're going to take kids, and we're going to do root canals, and we're going to open late, and we're going to, and the problem with that is, there's two problems with that. Problem number one, if you're doing everything, are you really good at all those things? Or are you mediocre at all of them? Because
exactly.
Yeah, and for example, my office, we do just about, we don't take Medi-Cal. We don't take HMOs. We are, you know, it's a fee-for-service office. We have PPO and fee-for-service patients. We have in-house plan for patients who cannot, you know, who don't have insurance and they don't want to pay a regular fee. So they're not, you know, they don't mind committing to our practice in a way of signing up for our membership. And then, you know, they get a discount. And also we have, we do perio, we do pedo, we do ortho, I've stopped doing ortho, but we're still doing a lot of Invisalign in my practice. We do sleep apnea treatments. We obviously restorative implants, oral surgery. What else do we do? We have an in-house endodontist. So we do everything, but we have five doctors, right? We still refer a lot. But we have five doctors, and each one of them has kind of their own niche, right? But if you have one dentist, or maybe even just, you know, two dentists, maybe a general dentist, and you're trying to do everything, first of all, I'm not sure you can. And second of all, you're not, what you're communicating to your potential patients is that, yes, it's convenient because everything can be done under one roof, but you're also communicating that you're nothing special because you do it all, right? And then the other thing that that worries me is that with that type of marketing is that when you're nothing special, you do everything, and so is everyone else. And then the only differentiator is the price. And so, what is the coupon that you're offering? You know, free bleaching, $100 off. You know, free X-rays, free consultation. All of a sudden, again, like I said earlier, The patient doesn't know the difference between one dentist and another, and so all they're looking at is the price. And then what we do, and I spend a lot of time on Facebook groups and on Dental Town, talking to a lot of dentists, and what we complain about is that our patients are too focused on the price or insurance.
Exactly. And then you have the bargain hunters. It's like really essentially with those types of ads, with all due respect, you're just attracting kind of people that are trying to lowball you in terms of what they want. And they're going to go with the price. And then that's always going to be the main concern.
Exactly. And doctors, you heard that from a patient. This is Ian. He's not a consultant. He is not a dentist. He has no vested interest because our company, we don't do marketing. This is coming from a patient, right? If your marketing is talking about, if all your marketing piece is offering the lowest price, then you are attracting patients who are only interested in low fees. So you're attracting a certain type of a patient, and you kind of training your patients that this is what's important. Even if they open the paper not looking for a coupon, I think what we're doing is we're putting this into the patient's head that fee is more important than what we do or who we are. Another thing that I see sometimes with offices is when we call the office or the patient calls the office, a lot of times, what is the first questions that the office will ask?
Do you take my insurance?
You're so good. You didn't know I was going to say that. But yes, that's what we ask. We say, do you take my insurance? And if you don't ask that, then we ask, do you have insurance? Now, sometimes we don't even have their phone number. We don't know if he has kids. We don't know, why he's calling. But we already ask about their insurance. And I've even heard situations where immediately they would say, oh, but we don't take that. Or is that an HMO or a PPO? And instead of talking about the patient, what this patient needs, why are they calling? What are their needs, wants, desires, fears? What we're talking about is insurance and cost. And then we complain about the bargain hunters. Well, the bargain hunter responded to your ad, and then which promoted the low fee, and then the bargain hunter became even more of a bargain hunter when you asked them about insurance. So now the patient is trained to believe that if the insurance doesn't, the insurance must be the biggest deal because that's the first question you asked. And for the most part, unfortunately, insurance won't go very far, and our patients don't understand that. So,
No, that's true.
That's a very good information. And so I've been really focused on, recommending my colleagues. And one of the things that we do in my practice is that obviously at some point we're going to ask about insurance. But for the most part, before we start, I want to learn about the patient. Why are you calling us? What prompted you to call today? I remember one time, and I've told this story on this podcast. It's probably something that's going to get cut out because I was told that sometimes I keep sharing the same story, and then the whoever's editing the podcast is going to cut that piece out. But I'm going to share it anyway because I love the story. Is that one time I had a patient in the chair, and she said, "You came highly recommended." And I said, "Who recommended me?" And she said, "Oh, Carmen did." And I said, "Oh, Carmen, like Carmen in my front office, Carmen?" She said, "Yeah, how do you know Carmen?" And the patient said, "Well, I don't know Carmen, but when I called and I told her that I was so nervous and I've had all those bad experiences," she said, "Don't worry, you called the right place. Dr. Gina Dorfman is amazing with patients who are fearful. She's going to take great care of you." And she came in. See, insurance and coupon. She didn't ask for discounts. I don't even know what her insurance was. Nothing that really was discussed while she was with me. But to her, it felt like a personal recommendation, even though Carmen was being paid for saying that. So I think that our teams are our ambassadors, they're not there necessarily. They're not insurance girls, you know. They're not the billing department. They're the ambassadors that are there to, and they're patients' advocates, right? So they're there to help the patient, you know, sort of formulate what is needed for them, and then connect them with that experience in our practices. Is that what you said?
Yeah, and I think that makes total sense, and it kind of hones in on the whole fact too. Like your front office, they get it. They are patients themselves. They've been in that, you know, in that position, and so they really do have the best interest of the practice at hand, or should.
That's excellent. That's good stuff, Ian. I'm glad we're doing this. You know, it's funny when you first came to me and you started, this was your vision. This was really your vision, because I was going to, you know, I was just interviewing doctors and, you know, because we're doctors. And
well, I thought like once a month it'd be fun to like, you know, change it up, really throw a curveball that way for your audience.
I really think that this is really educational for us, because we don't get to hear this perspective. We don't hear, you know, very rarely does the patient come back and talk about their experience. And I have to tell you, even when they do, and I don't know about other doctors, but I'm not always comfortable just even accepting a compliment. And so when a patient will come back and say to me, "You're so wonderful," and I'll just, you know, I get all uncomfortable, and sometimes I manage to kind of squeeze out like, "Oh, can you tell everyone, like go online and write me a review," and, you know, because it will really help us to, it will help. No, let me rephrase that. The thing that I say is, thank you so much for sharing this. This makes me feel so good. If you're going to have a couple of minutes, if you don't mind, go online and give us a testimonial or review. It will really help patients like you who are looking for a dentist that is blah, 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 and that I may restate what it is that they specifically mentioned to me. Find us online. And I think that asking for a review, so here's the thing. I'm using Yappy in my practice to generate reviews. But I find that when we ask them, in addition to automatically sending the review request, that helps even more, because
definitely.
And I also kind of pause, and a lot of times they'll say, "Oh, absolutely, yes." And then once they said that, they committed, and so the likelihood of them writing that review is increased. And then I'll say, "Oh, I'm looking forward to reading it," and of course I read, and I always respond.
And I can attest to that too. Like I always, if I have a good experience somewhere, I generally would want to share that experience. It's just that we do get busy. We have busy lives, all of us. Busy moms, busy dads, busy people working at Yappy. And it's just that point where I think a little reminder goes a long way. And then that little automation really makes the big difference too.
Absolutely. And I've been a little bit more mindful leaving reviews for people that make my life easier as well. You know, because we know this, right? We know how much those reviews matter. I've done a lot of marketing in my practice before. So when I first opened, this was 2002, I opened my practice, and it was saturated back then, you know. I remember people telling me, this was 17 years ago, actually April is going to be 18 years that I opened my practice.
Wow.
Yeah. people were saying, you're not going to make it. This is too saturated. What are you doing with opening this big practice in like Los Angeles? And it was scary. It was really scary. It wasn't as big as it is right now, but it was still scary. And I've tried some marketing. We did those did some Val Pack where I gave them like $100 certificate for whatever they wanted to do, which I thought was actually pretty good, because I wasn't really, it was more like a gift as opposed to free service. You know, I felt like it was a little bit more dignified as far as giving them a discount. And then they could use it for, I mean, if they wanted to use their $100 towards their $20,000 veneer case, that was fine. We've tried some other ways of marketing my practice, but ever since Google and Yelp, I haven't had to market my practice. I have not done
it's amazing.
I know everyone comes in through our Google reviews or our Yelp reviews. Yelp is really big where we are in California. Explain to me what you're thinking when you're reading those reviews from people that you've never met before and you trust them. How does that work? And I'm not being critical because I do the same. I totally trust online reviews.
I do too. I trust online reviews. I think where I get cautious are the ones that definitely don't have a photo, especially on Yelp. If they don't have a photo and it seems like a rant, I have a harder time trusting those types of reviews. I think other things I look for, caps, too many exclamation marks. If someone is a little too over-exclamatory with their punctuation, that kind of is a red flag for me. I look for, most importantly, like continuity, like what is the overall message I'm getting from all of these reviews. And then that's what I kind of use as the determining fact to decide whether or not it is, you know, valid to me or not.
So what you're saying is that, let's say there's a bunch of reviews, and first of all, the overall gist is more important than, I guess like if you have someone with, 200 reviews, let's say, I'm not saying that there is a right number, because basically you have to have more reviews than the guys, in your geographic area, but...
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about it, from the standpoint of, like, maybe a bigger corporation or, like, a storefront that I'm constantly going to. Those are the ones where I'd look more at the overall message. But if it's a smaller place and there's a very small number, I would go more toward the ones that look most human with a photo and not overly exclamatory.
As a millennial... you probably don't want to, call the dentist and leave a voicemail and then have them call you.
I hate being on the phone. It's like my biggest time suck of my life.
So tell me about that. What do you like with automation? You mentioned that was an important factor to you. And the other thing you mentioned is that they followed up with you the next day. So tell me about those two things.
I would say the only time I don't like automation is when it's like, I've ordered something from Wayfair and it's a couch and it has a defective leg. And then I have to go through some type of automation to have the conflict resolved. That's when I don't like automation. When I'm upset about something and I need some sort of resolution, I don't want to go through a bunch of automated messages or text messages. On the other hand, however, I'm very busy. Like I work a lot. I travel. I like to do things over the weekend. The last thing I want to do is be bothered with phone calls. And the same thing that goes for, even like confirming an optometry appointment or an appointment with my medical provider. A lot of the times I have my phone on silent at work and I'm not checking my messages throughout the day. And the last thing I want to do with my, medical doctors, have to listen to a message and then call this 1-800 number, press 1 for, this department, and then schedule an appointment. It's always just an ongoing hassle. And then it takes like 15 minutes, of my time on lunch. I don't want to have to deal with that. So I'm all about convenience. I appreciate automation when it is conveniently foregoing a bunch of steps that I have to make on my end that create a lot of frustration and wasted time. I think someone like me or millennial is going to be much more prone to deal with automation than to deal with a human.
So let me ask you another question.
Automation
this is something
is
that
key.
Comes up sometimes with our customers in general with patients. Of course, we try to prevent it by recommending a certain appointment confirmation and recall sequence that we think the most effective without sort of carpet bombing our patients with appointment reminders. In fact, I just heard somewhere that there's a class action lawsuit that someone is trying to file against a dentist for sending too many messages. And they're saying something like the messages are killing the battery. I think it's a money grab, to be honest. So someone got really pissed off. A bad review wasn't enough. We're gonna file
Take it the next level.
So too many messages. And like I said, with our system, there are a couple of things that we can do. First of all, we recommend a system that is kind of progressive. And then once they confirm, no other messages go out. And we also recommend kind of figuring out what is the patient's preference for receiving email, so we're not coming at them from different sources. And we also try to, educate our customers on the fact that, hey, you know, if you send a patient one message and two messages and three messages and they're not responding, that's a response. Like, they're not ignoring you. They're not missing those messages. Something is going on that needs to be addressed, right? Like, pick up the phone and call, because right now you're beyond the automation. But as a patient, what is your perspective? Because we do hear that sometimes patients get upset about getting too many messages.
I mean, for me, if I had a good experience at my dentist and that there's the notion that I'm going to be coming in 6 months, you know, I've already gotten a message, I think there's the expectation already that I'm going to get that. And I am personally going to confirm. But if I forget to confirm and then I'm getting a follow-up message, I don't think I'm going to take that too hastily and be like, oh my gosh, this is really annoying. I think what would be annoying is if I started getting a lot of promotional content on top of that, or maybe some sort of a reminder on too many platforms. I think that's where I would be a little concerned or
irritated.
Great point,
actually, you made. Because sometimes we do hear our customers ask about, you know, promotional text messages. And, you know, we have a lot of social media messages available. We have email blasts available. We have some, you know, content for promotional content that we want to share with our customers. But, you know, you're right. I mean, my text messaging is for actionable things. I don't want to be getting, hey, we got a CEREC, we can do your crown
exactly.
in one day type stuff. Okay, so we got to start wrapping this up. Unfortunately, I want to keep talking to you, and it's funny because you're right next door to me. I think this is really informative. I think there's a lot there as a dentist or as a front office, back office.
I think as a dentist, sometimes you've been practicing for so long, it's hard to put yourself in the patient's mind. And sometimes it's good to just get a different perspective from someone who isn't a dentist.
Absolutely. And what we're going to do is we started with you, but we're going to interview some more people in different, you know, who are patients, and maybe some of them work in dentistry, maybe others don't work in dentistry at all. Maybe they're just patients, and I would love to hear their perspective. And I really hope that this is beneficial to our listeners, and they can take some lessons and they can make some changes in their practices. Whether they're going to, start doing something, or they're going to change the way they do other things to really improve the patient experience. Because that's what it's all about. It's not, you know, when patients review our practices, when they decide whether they're going to come back to us for more treatment, to accept our treatment plan, recommend others, sometimes even during that very first contact with the office, whether they're reaching out by text or by phone, we're making a lot of decisions, and those decisions are based on how they feel and not what really happened. Ian, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Thank you for letting us talk about your sort of more maybe private, dental concerns and some of your fears. I think it was very generous of you to come and share your story. As usual, I thank you. And I'm going to talk to you in a couple of minutes when we're done with our podcast. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Smiles. Today's episode was brought to you by Yappy.
an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. You can learn more about Yappy by visiting www.yappyapp.com. If you have any suggestions for future guests, or if you have any questions for us, you can reach out to Dr. Gina directly. Send your email to drgina@yappycentral.com. You can also find the email in our show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or on any of the apps that you're listening from. It's greatly appreciated. And as always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.